Funding for WBUR comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
The pitch is looped towards shortstop. Petrocelli's back. He's got it. The Red Sox win. And it's pandemonium on the field.
The day has dawned on the next 100 years in the life of Fenway Park, as today Red Sox Nation celebrates the 100th birthday of the ballpark that's seen more of its share of joy and heartbreak. Our series, Fenway 100, concludes this morning as WBUR's Karen Given takes us down memory lane.
Before there was a park, there was a song.
Hey, you make me feel so badly. Why don't you turn around?
The team wasn't called the Red Sox yet, but the Royal Rooters, the raucous fans of the Boston Americans, chose Tessie, a popular tune of the early 1900s, to taunt their rivals while marching from McGreevy's Tavern to the Huntington Avenue grounds. Owner John Taylor, tired of playing in a rented park and eager to bring attention to land he was developing along the fens, sold half of his team to finance the construction of Fenway Park.
I said to my friend Skinny Nation, let's go and see how they're getting along.
The late Morris Burke was approaching his 100th birthday in 1997 when he told Only a Game's Bill Littlefield the story of how he snuck into Fenway Park before workers had even installed the sod.
No grass in the middle of February. So I walk out on the field, mud and all, and I said, this is about the way the pitcher would stand. Skinny, you go over there and you'll be the catcher. I threw imaginary ball, and he threw it back. And I claim to be the first pitcher at Fenway Park.
Fenway Park's official first pitch was thrown out by Mayor John Honeyfitz Fitzgerald, grandfather to JFK and great-grandfather to Sweet Caroline. But we're getting ahead of ourselves. The Sox won the 1912 World Series at Fenway, but the park was deemed too small to host the team's 1915 and 1916 championships. But Fenway was more than big enough for the 1918 World Series. With a country at war and an influenza epidemic raging, even Morris Burke didn't make it down to the park.
No, I wouldn't have been very interested. I had just graduated MIT, and I was trying to get a job to avoid the draft.
Hey, who's that? Casey? Nope, it's Ted Williams, Red Sox power hitter extraordinary.
Ted Williams debuted at Fenway in 1939 and soon caught the attention of a young Norman Dworkin.
I was a member of the Knothole Gang, the Boston Braves.
But his devotion to the Braves, who played at what's now Boston University's Nickerson Field, ended after one journey just a mile and a half down the street.
Well, I went to see this big shot player from the Red Sox, saved my money. Went through the turnstile to unreserved seats in front right field. I never went to another Braves game.
Fenway hosted the All-Star Game in 1946 and lost to the St. Louis Cardinals that same year in Game 7 of the World Series.
Jack Fisher into his windup. Here's the pitch. Williams swings, and there's a long drive to deep right. That ball is going, and it is gone.
That's Ted Williams hitting a home run in his last at-bat, September 28, 1960. When Williams left the game, so did many fans. Just 4 years later, on October 1, 1964, with the team in the gutter, only 306 of Fenway's faithful showed up to watch the Red Sox beat the Indians 4-2. It was the lowest attended Red Sox game in Fenway's history. 8 days later, the Boston Patriots took on the Chargers in front of more than 33,000 fans at their home stadium, Fenway Park.
They're just mobbing Jim Lundborg, and what a day this is!
Some say the impossible dream season of 1967 saved Fenway. Before Lundborg, Yaz, Tony C., and the rest came within one game of a World Series title, there had been a push to tear it down.
Pitch forward. 60 seconds.
On July 20th, 1969, Sandy Sorrell was attending her first Red Sox game when Apollo 11 landed on the moon.
the announcer stopped the game, and they showed it on the big screen, which in those days was totally black and white, and the crowd just went hush.
Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
The Red Sox went to the World Series again in 1975 and lost in seven games. In 1986, another trip to the series, another seven games, and another heartbreaking loss.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the greatest hitter that ever lived.
When Ted Williams threw out the first pitch for the 1999 All-Star Game, it felt like Fenway's swan song. Just 2 months earlier, Red Sox CEO John Harrington had declared that it would be easier to straighten the Leaning Tower of Pisa than to fix Fenway Park. Larry Lucchino says he and his fellow owners, John Henry and Tom Werner, had other plans.
It's a beautiful place. It has a historical feel. History sort of oozes from its pores.
Over the next decade, the new owners pumped more than $275 million into renovating Fenway. World Series wins in 2004 and 2007 silenced all whispers about the team being cursed, and the Sox have sold every seat at every game since May 15, 2003. New traditions have come to Fenway, too. When Dr. Charles Steinberg came on board with the new owners, he wondered what would happen if the team started playing Sweet Caroline at every game instead of just when the Sox were winning.
Well, you would have thought I was, you know, looking to paint the Green Monster pink. It was a scary notion.
Soon, Dr. Charles says, the Sox found that the song could turn losing games into winners.
When you're talking about Sweet Caroline, it harkens back to Tessie in 1903, 1912, 1915, 1916, 1918, that the singing of the song was a contributor to the atmosphere that the players acknowledged gave them an advantage.
Hand. Touching hands.
Years later, Neil Diamond confirmed that Sweet Caroline was written for Caroline Kennedy, great-granddaughter of Honey Fitz, the mayor who threw out Fenway Park's official first pitch on April 20th, 1912. So good. For 90.9 WBUR, I'm Karen Gibbons.